This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. This is Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. A lot of us casually use the word stalk, joking about the ways we keep tabs on friends and enemies online, mainly to get up to speed on mindless gossip. But stalking is a much darker and serious issue, often affecting domestic partners, estranged spouses, or romantic interests of some kind, and involving various forms of harassment, which can sometimes even escalate to murder. Stalking is currently not an offence in Malaysia, and joining me now to discuss why it should be made a crime are Yu Ren Chung, an advocate manager at the Women's Aid Organization, and Anne Nunes, a women's rights activist also with the WAO. Welcome, both of you. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you.
Thanks so much for having us.
My pleasure. Thank you for joining us. So before we get into everything, maybe the both of you could tell me a little bit about the work that you guys do.
Absolutely. So I work at the Women's Aid Organization, or WAO. We are a women's rights NGO that provides services to domestic violence survivors, and we also advocate for improve public policies and public awareness around domestic violence and women's mm-hmm. rights generally.
And as advocacy manager, what exactly are your...
So as advocacy manager, I lead our advocacy program, which basically is the public policies and public awareness side of the program. So our core work is providing services to survivors. But we know we can only help a fixed amount of women, to those that come to us, and we also have resource limitations. But if we can change systems, changing laws, changing policies, and change the way people think and behave, then we can actually reach out to many more individuals.
Mm-hmm. And what about you, Anne?
Yeah, so I have been affiliated with WAO for about 8 years now, both as a social worker and currently as a women's rights activist, helping them to promote the issues that are important, such as what we're talking about today, but stalking. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and 8 years, so now you're kind of not quite with them, but with them.
Yeah, so currently I'm a member with WAO and mm-hmm. currently help out as a women's rights activist okay. at WAO.
So you're doing a lot of outreach programs as well?
More so with publicity and so on, talking about issues like this.
Okay, all mm-hmm. right. Okay, so I mean, we're talking about stalking now. Just to kind of get people to understand what actually constitutes stalking.
Yeah, I think what you said in your intro is quite what maybe a lot of people might think about stalking as something that they just say it in a very casual way. Mm-hmm. And I think that's fine. But I think people also have an understanding. If you say, okay, stalking is a serious issue, mm-hmm. I think people have an idea of what that means in their head. So you might think of somebody following you around repeatedly or continuously. You go home, that person is there. You go to your work, your person is there. Or maybe that person communicates with you all the time. It calls you 50 times a day, 100 times a day, something like that. So I think people kind of have an idea of that. But just to put it in more concrete terms, I think there are a few elements that are important to stalking. Mm-hmm. So first is that it's a pattern or something repetitive or continuous. So it happens maybe, you know, more than once or happens continuously. That's the first point. The second point is something that's unwanted. So it's okay if someone you like and want is following you around and you're right. So, but you know, repeatedly calling someone and so on. But this is something that's unwanted. Mm-hmm. So the acts can include harassing, contacting, following, and so on. But the key is that it's unwanted. And then the third point is that it causes someone to feel fear. And how do you say, you know, what causes someone to cause fear? Then normally in the legal sense, they use the term reasonable. So it would reasonably cause someone to cause fear. Or if someone looks at that pattern of behavior, a reasonable person would say, yeah, that is something that causes fear. So for example, some person that you may not know or not following you every day, showing up in places unexpectedly, I think a reasonable person can look at that pattern and say, okay, yeah, that's kind of scary. Mm-hmm.
Or mm-hmm. even someone you know as well. Because with stalking, it can happen with those that we know yeah. and mm-hmm. those that we don't know as well. Either way, as long as you have a sense of fear and it causes you to not feel safe, those are the things that you need to look out for. Mm-hmm. And I actually wanted to add to what Ren Chung was talking about earlier, where Ren Chung said we talk about it in a very simplistic way in a day-to-day basis. And what complicates it further is when we have social media now, it's so easy. And people, you know, sometimes when we keep looking at someone's photos or looking at where they are, you know, sometimes even a group of friends would say, why are you being such a stalker?
You know,
so where do you draw the line? And I think what Ren Chung had mentioned is very true in stalking. When it causes you to feel fear, when it's unwanted and persistent, those are things to look out for.
And as you said, by nature, it's not just a one-time occurrence. It's something. It's a pattern of harassment.
It's a pattern, yeah.
and threats as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely.
Okay. And as you also said, stalking can be done to people both unknown and known to the victim. I mean, mm-hmm. how common is it that... I mean, I think we've all heard of celebrity stalking, so that's usually the unknown. But I suppose we're talking now about cases where it's known, so domestic partners, for example.
Yeah, I think there are... You could think of situations where the person wants to cause fear. And so just by being at a particular place or by making them making it known that, you know, I'm following you, I know where you are. Yeah. So we have, someone might send a message saying, oh, nice, you know, red scarf you're wearing today. So they want to make themselves known in that sense. But then you might think of other situations where the person may not want to necessarily make known that they're stalking. So they might actually just follow you around quietly or secretly in the process of leading up to something a bit more severe. Mm-hmm. So a lot of cases of spousal murder, a lot of cases of serious injury are preceded by acts of stalking, and that may not be known actually to the person being stalked.
Yeah. Okay.
And, you know, technology has added a new and some might say terrifying dimension to stalking. Could you tell us a little bit about cyber stalking in particular?
So I think when it comes to cyber stalking and the internet, what has really happened is the behavior is similar, but the internet has given a new set of tools and new set of avenues to for the stalker to actually stalk you. Mm-hmm. So you could think of one example of communication. So someone can easily message you via Facebook, WhatsApp, WeChat, and so on. That's number one. And so you may think of from a non-digital sense, someone might call you, someone might drop you something in your mailbox, and for example.
And like your picture.
Yeah,
exactly.
So when it comes to online, there are so many more tools to do that. That's, I think, the first tool. The second is actually the internet provides a stalker with new means to monitor you. So, you know, you check into some place on Facebook or Foursquare, or you might post a picture of yourself and with a background that's recognizable. So the stalker now can more easily, if you're not careful, identify where you are, and that will help the stalker follow you you around.
And even when you say you're going for an event on Facebook, like you click that you're going, so much easier to know where you are, and you can't actually really vary your routine. If you're being stalked, you don't know you're being stalked. If you do things like that, it makes it that much easier to be stalked. I think stalking actions also follow a continuum as well. And three broad categories of, you know, either being followed, communicating, or actual physical aggression and violence. And especially in the first two categories, social media makes it that much easier to do cyber stalking, which, you know, materialize in real life instances as well.
Mm. And I can imagine a lot of people actually saying now, well, they should just improve their privacy, right? But I mean, that again is, I suppose, a form of victim blaming, isn't it?
Mm.
And, you know, you can't control things like someone tagging you in a photo, for example, you know, those sorts of things and all of that. One anonymous victim that I was reading about, you know, I mean, she was advised to stop using social media. And when she reported it to the police, this was overseas, she said she was made to feel like it was her fault for being on Facebook. I mean, how do we even respond to that?
I think there are two ways to respond. The first is to think of a clear example where, for example, someone working opposite your work, you work in a shop lot, someone opposite you knows about you, maybe they see you coming to work every day, and then that person starts stalking you continuously. So then you can think of an example where, oh, the stalking victim survivor has not really done anything extraordinary to put herself out there, yet she still can be subjected to stalking. I think that's quite clear. Mm-hmm. And another way to answer this question would be to think of, which really addresses the question more deeply, is to think, to what extent do we want to trade off our freedoms and rights just to live a safe life and live a life that person wants to live. Mm. So I think in terms of trying to shape your society from a legal sense and from sort of a policy sense, the goal should be how can we enable these safety mechanisms so that, you know, as much as possible, people can live their lives as they want.
Mm-hmm. I'm speaking today to Yu Renchung and Ann Nunes. They are both with WAO, and we're discussing the need to criminalise stalking in Malaysia. We'll discuss this more after this quick break. You are listening to Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Julia Jacobs. In the studio with me today are Yuren Chung and Ann Nunes. They are both with WAO, which is the Women's Aid Organization, and we're discussing criminalising stalking in Malaysia. So currently, it's not a crime in Malaysia. Stalking is not a crime in Malaysia. Why is that?
So why is that? I think we need to just look at the progression of stalking laws globally. And the first specific stalking law was introduced in 1990 in the state of California in the US. And since then, different jurisdictions and countries have actually taken on and specifically recognized stalking as a crime. You know, as circumstances change and as people sort of realize that this issue is a problem, more and more countries have sort of criminalized stalking through specific legislation. So Singapore has recently done so in the past. I think it was 2014, India as well recently. The UK had a law in 1990 to address harassment, which was also designed to criminalize stalking. But they, seeing as it was not as effective as they imagined, they actually took a step in 2012 to specifically spell out stalking and what it was and that it was a crime.
Right.
So in that sense, it's not super surprising that Malaysia would not have yet criminalized stalking, but it's still a concern because we can look at all these other countries in the region as well and globally that have already done so. And then we can ask, why haven't we done so yet? And so I think the question is, seeing that it's a best practice in other places and it's a problem that's been recognized in Malaysia and abroad, can we then take that proactive step and ensure legal protection?
Yeah, because I mean, currently as it stands, I could easily start following, I don't know, minister, for example. I could trail him or her and that wouldn't be considered a crime, would it?
Yeah, so you're right.
And that is scary.
It's only a crime if there is physical violence or a physical threat. If you think the person is following you or waiting for you outside, that's actually not a crime as yet. And that's pretty scary because, like I said before, stalking happens on a continuum. You know, it could happen where you're following and observing a person. It could go on to communicating. So where does it stop, you know? And meanwhile, the person who is being stalked, there's a lot of different emotions that could be going on with that person that can affect their life. So that is quite an issue and it's not a crime.
So if I'm continuously following you around and I'm carrying a very inanimate object, which could be a weapon, even that's not considered as.
So I think, broadly speaking, there are three different avenues that someone who's being stalked can try and get help. So first is if the stalker is your spouse, ex-spouse or family member, then you can try and seek protection under the Domestic Violence Act. And specifically under the newly amended Domestic Violence Act, which provides stronger protection. So under this new act, which is not a law yet, but should become a law within the next month or so, you can get what's called an emergency protection order or an interim protection order, which can include protections against stalking. So it can say, the protection order can say something like, so-and-so cannot come within 50 meters of you or cannot communicate with you. So if you get a protection order, you can actually be protected from stalking. So that's kind of there are limitations, and basically the protection order is time bound. It'll only last throughout, for example, the IPO. It only lasts throughout the investigation.
Exactly,
so if the investigation ends and nothing happens, then you're kind of left without any protection. And secondly, it's not an automatic order. A magistrate has to decide that to put in the order protecting you against stalking. So that's kind of the limitations of being protected by against stalking in the Domestic Violence Act. The second way you can get protection, so and again, the Domestic Violence Act only applies to spouses or family members. So if that doesn't apply to you, then you're in a bit of a trouble. You don't have a lot of avenues. You do have some avenues. So for example, you can actually think if the stalker has done other acts that are currently crimes. So if it has escalated to actually causing harm or threatening to cause harm, or, for example, damaging your property or trespassing on your property, then you could try and lodge a report based on those things. So then you don't get protection necessarily, but the police will at least will investigate what has happened.
Right.
So it's some kind of limited action you can take. And then the third way that one can get protection under the current laws is through getting an injunction. So, for example, if you're going through a civil case with somebody, you can actually apply for a civil injunction that prohibits the other person from doing certain things against you. The problem with that is it can cost thousands, even 10,000-20,000 ringgit in legal fees just to apply, just to get that one order. So you can imagine that this mechanism would only be applied to few people who can actually afford to get it.
And this is a crime that has no, I mean, it doesn't know any social or economic.
Exactly. And so these three legal remedies now, the first, the Domestic Violence Act, second, under existing crimes in the Penal Code, and third, through injunction orders, are very, very limited and only apply to certain people and certain actions. if Anne was saying earlier, if someone just follows you around without actually hurting you yet, then that's
or
not,
interaction with you.
That's not actually a crime. And we know that serious injuries or even murder is often preceded by stalking.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea to criminalize stalking is, can we stop it? Can we prevent these further injuries by stopping the action before it actually happens?
Yeah.
How common are stalking charges in relation to domestic violence cases in particular? Would you have any figures? Maybe looking just at Malaysia, for example.
It's hard to say because technically stalking itself is not... So the crime would be breaking a protection order or breaking an interim protection order. Just breaking a protection order. So we know that out of maybe 5,000 or 6,000 reports of domestic violence a year, very few actually... cases go to court and result in a protection order, maybe even below 100 a year, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
So even those who get an order is so small currently. You know, I would imagine those breaching the order and actually charged for that would be less than 10 or something like that every year. So then with the new Domestic Violence Act, one can actually be protected by stalking under not just the protection order, which comes at the court stage, but also the interim protection order, which comes during the police investigation stage, and through this new mechanism called the EPO, which can be issued for a period of 7 days. So hopefully with this new act, it'll improve protection against stalking, at least for those whom the Domestic Violence Act applies to.
And I guess, you know, just for someone who doesn't understand, why is stalking so harmful? I mean, what kind of, you know, effect does it have on the victims?
I mean, you really need to look at how, like, if you were just a regular person, right, and you're going about your daily life, and then you find that, you know, there may be someone that you keep seeing around your housing area, around your workplace, after a while it's going to freak you out. And this can, I mean, over time, because stalking does not happen on a one time, it's persistent, it's over time, and it can actually go up the spectrum where it goes up to communicating with the person or even communicating with their friends and family, trying to plant themselves in their lives, for example. It can make someone have anxiety, stress, and that can affect, you know, sleeping habits, affect how they are productive at work or school. It can even make them more closed off, and in very serious cases, you know, on a long-term spectrum, it can actually affect characteristic personalities. For example, someone who may be more extroverted could after a while become more introverted and become less trusting of a person, could also want to stay at home more and be afraid of going out. It could actually result in agoraphobia, for example. Those are really serious and real effects of stalking, because again, it's persistent, and if it's not something that we can report, it can just go on and there's no intervention that's done, no protection for the person being stalked.
And that's a great point, I think. So we know that stalking itself is harmful. I think the second point that I want to make, in addition to what Anne has said, is that stalking, it's harmful in itself, but it also precedes more serious harm. So just to give you an example, studies done in other countries, one specifically in Canada and the United States, showed that 90% of murder or attempted murder victims by a spouse were actually preceded by stalking by that spouse. In Malaysia, you know, we've seen case studies. If you read news reports of murder news reports or reports of serious injuries, you read the story closely, you'll see that oftentimes there are elements of stalking inside that story as well. So, for example, there was a widely circulated story in February this year about a woman who was murdered in a law firm in Kuala Lumpur. And if you look at the story just like that, you'll say, okay, it's a murder case. But if you read it, you'll see there's multiple instances of stalking happened before the murder. So the son reported that it was not the first time the man had accosted his ex-wife at her workplace. So he's been to the workplace many times before. The husband also harassed her at her firm's old office. So they had moved already. But, you know, even in the old office, new office, the husband kept coming. And then eventually he actually shot her. So if that stalking could have been stopped, and we know this is not an isolated incident based on the studies that I was just mentioning just now. So, you know, if we can stop it at the stalking stage, then this woman would still be alive.
Yeah, I guess it kind of boggles the mind that this man was, you know, going to her workplace and, you know, making it so public. It wasn't even a hidden thing.
No.
And no one had the power to do anything about it.
Exactly, yeah.
So that means even the employers were not allowed, could not possibly make a police report that this man is harassing her?
Yeah, the only thing they could do, really, and we have these cases now, you know, it's not a, you know, cases that WA works on, it's quite a common thing. So if the person is just at the office, as you say, they can't really do anything unless they force themselves inside the office, okay, then maybe you can report to police that this person has trespassed.
Right.
Well, yeah. If that person is just showing up, you know, you can't, and you know that that person is dangerous, but there's not much legal protection there.
I actually would like to give an example of a case that WAO had recently where a spouse was, well, of course the woman had left the spouse because it was not safe for her anymore.
So this was a case of domestic violence?
Domestic violence, yes. And what happened was that the husband actually showed up at her place of work, but because he was waiting outside, there wasn't much that she could do. But at the same time, because she could not leave her place of work, she could not go to a car, and for some reason, I don't know how this happened, but he was able to find a way to get in the office and even to her car park.
Oh,
so, again, there was not much that she could do because he did not force entry. He was let in to the office as well because even though the guards knew that he could not be let in, he had known other people within the office who, of course, did not know what was going on. It's, of course, something that she may not have wanted to talk about to everybody. So in that case, what happens? You know, and this is a woman who is afraid and who does not have the protection at that point for herself. So that was quite difficult in that case. Yeah.
And I mean, even if they don't make it in, for example, you know, just kind of hovering around them, I mean, that's
it
causing
does,
kind
it
of
does.
A psychological it, trauma to
so
the
So much
survivor.
Of psychological trauma. You really get so anxious and jumpy. And we've seen this with the clients that we work with, you know. It's not just the difficulty of dealing with the criminal justice system, but it's also in dealing with the psychology of it, you know, being afraid of where you're going, being very jumpy,
constantly
not trusting,
looking over your shoulder.
Constantly looking over your shoulder. They have sleep difficulties, which affects their ability to really decide what's going on because there are just so many factors you have to consider, not just about what to do with your case, but also in how to look after yourself and how do you really look after yourself when you're constantly looking everywhere for this person that you're afraid of and who might harm you. Yeah.
So I guess, I mean, as much as, you know, you don't want to talk about your personal life, I suppose in cases like this, if you've already seen examples of your ex-spouse hanging out outside your office, I guess it's something that you need to kind of tell people.
Yeah, and that's why we really say that it's important for you to be able to locate at least one or two people whom you can trust. Tell them what's going on. Make them your emergency contact if you can. And if you can go to a women's organization that you can get more advice from or can help you to get protection, that would be another avenue. But it's really important to be able to have that one, even if it's one person, that you can tell what's going on to and who can be on alert for you. That's so important.
Okay, so the minister in the Women, Family and Community and Development Ministry, Dato' Sri Rohani Abdul Karim, she actually pointed out that stalking is currently not a crime in Malaysia. And as you mentioned, she added the amendments to the Domestic Violence Act, which were just passed. But she also said that it needs to be made a crime in the Penal Code. Am I right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So the Domestic Violence Act, it doesn't generally create offences per se. It's actually read together with existing criminal law, mostly in the Penal Code.
Mm-hmm.
So the Domestic Violence Act might say, you know, if you hit somebody, then if you commit physical violence, that's domestic violence. But where does the crime of physical violence actually, where is it actually defined? That's defined in the Penal Code. So if you look in the Penal Code, it'll have sections on causing harm and various forms of causing harm. So when the police investigates, they would look at the Penal Code and say, okay, this is causing harm under this section. And because it's domestic violence, I can then provide you with these special remedies, like a protection order and so on. So before an offence is actually included and defined as domestic violence, it needs to be defined somewhere else. And in this case, it would normally be the Penal Code. So the Penal Code does not, or any other law in Malaysia, because it does not actually criminalise stalking, the Domestic Violence Act cannot criminalise stalking either. So
right.
What the minister was saying, actually, the minister last year had said that she wanted to explore putting stalking as an offence in the Domestic Violence Act. But then later, unfortunately, she was not able to because it was not an offence in the Penal Code
yet. Penal Code, okay. But I thought there was a working committee to review laws on violence against women and children back in 2013, 2015, and they actually wanted to add stalking to the Penal Code, but nothing quite came of that.
Yeah, it's a really interesting committee chaired by the Attorney General at the time. And it included various agencies, government agencies, as well as NGOs, collaborating on putting reviewing proposals to improve laws on violence against women, and then actually creating proposals. So the Domestic Violence Act is something that kind of was birthed from that committee. Of course, the current ministry
amendments,
of, yes, yeah. So the Ministry of Women played a leadership role. Of course, it's their bill that they pushed forward, but it kind of the discussion and all and a lot of the ideas came from that committee that the ministry played a big role in. Of course, so stalking was one of these issues that was also discussed during these meetings, and in fact, a proposed law was actually drafted by the committee as a proposal just for discussion. And it was kind of okay kind of legal language. So I think that when that committee kind of ended in 2015, a lot of the proposals, some of them were taken on. So for example, Domestic Violence Act, that was taken on by the ministry that took leadership on that. For stalking wasn't really something that any ministry took leadership on. Mm-hmm. So right now we're trying to sort of bring it back and say, hey, you know, remember this thing, and a lot of work has been done, so let's kind of look at it. And so thankfully, Dr. Sri Rohani Abdul Karim has stepped up and sort of identified that as one of the priorities that she's keen on doing and pushing forward as well. So we're looking forward to continuing to work with her and her ministry. And she has excellent policy and legal staff at the ministry, I must say. So we're looking forward to continuing our working with them, including to push forward stalking protections.
Okay. And I mean, like we said, it's not just a thing happening to domestic violence victims. It could happen to anybody. Stalking is a crime for, I mean, that can affect anyone, right?
Yeah.
What are your recommendations then? How are we going to, you know, what can somebody like me, for example, do to put the pressure on to get this done?
Well, I guess what we are doing now is we're trying to mostly provide that input to policymakers. So doing some analysis on what's happening in other countries and providing some information on actual cases of stalking to the ministry and other policymakers to help them along the way. So I guess providing technical input is one role that the NGOs are doing. I think in terms of if you're just sort of anyone, any individual person can definitely help by making it known that stalking is an issue that you care about, that stalking is an issue that, you know, it's an issue of public concern. And you can do this by, you know, you can call your representative, you can write an op-ed, a letter to the editor, you can, you know, even just like tweet and tag your MP or tag the Ministry of Women or tag the minister in your tweet. You can write directly to them. So there are a number of things that anyone can do, I think, to show that this is a priority and it's something that we would like the government and lawmakers to pursue.
So, you know, I was reading in Canada, actually, they recommend that you keep a stalking log. So, you know, to actually detail every single thing that has happened, every single occurrence. I mean, it's not a criminal offence here yet, but would you recommend that to somebody who's facing...
Definitely. It's very important to, if you think you're being stalked, to keep that log as well. It's not just about messages and photos, if you can, but also instances, dates and times, places where you observed that you were being stalked. Mm-hmm. And if you could keep a, you know, description of a person, if you managed to get a photo of that person, keep all of those things, not just on your phone, but back it up onto a cloud or Dropbox or something, because you don't know when your phone is going to crash or get stolen or get hacked into. So just back it up into a cloud so you have that. That's definitely one thing that's important to do. I'd also, you know, say that it's important to be able to make a police report. Even though it's not considered a crime, you can make a cover report at least and tell them that, look, I'm making this report because I fear for my safety.
Yeah.
You know, and whether you want police to intervene or not, that would be up to you. You can say, you know, I want the police to warn him or her. Mm-hmm. That, you know, I don't like this and this is not wanted and I don't feel safe, so please warn them. Those are things that are important, you know, because at some point you're going to need that for evidence. Like I mentioned before, stalking happens in the continuum. You don't know whether this person is going to stay on a level where they are less harmful. You don't know if they're going to interact with you. Either way, it's good to have that backup with you and also be able to tell people, look, I don't like this. This is not fun. It's not funny. I don't appreciate it. Please stop.
And just looking at, I think, cases of domestic violence, for example, I think a lot of the times it's an act of aggression, it's an act of harassment and...
it's an act of power and control.
Power and control, yeah, exactly. So the survivor already feels so fearful. Mm-hmm. You know, what can we, the people surrounding them, you know, how can we actually help? Do we have any powers in that sense?
For sure. I mean, I think that it's really important to, be non-judgmental. It may be quite difficult, especially when the person may not want to do anything about it, or if the person is denying that it's happening because no one would believe this is happening to them. It's very important to just be able to provide that safety and security for him or her.
Mm-hmm.
And watch out for, you know, if your friend or your family member is being jumpy, extra alert, being more withdrawn, if they're twitchy, you know, those are certain things that to look out for as well, because they may be worried about their surroundings. Check in with them if you think that, you know, there may have been an issue that they're going through. Those are different things that can happen. And encourage them to, you know, to be able to seek help, or even if it's from a women's organization, because we would be able to help them figure out a plan. And be their safety contact if you can, an emergency contact if you can. And the other important thing that you could do to help them is also to figure out ways to build a emergency plan.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I see this person here, what do I do? For example, don't be alone. Go to a public place. Call me, your friend. Those are different things that you can do to support them. The support is very important. Even with a domestic violence survivor, you know, having the support of someone close would be important. It's no different in this case mm-hmm. as well.
And also as an employer, I think it's important that if you notice your staff, you know, or you notice somebody weird hanging around and your staff looking a bit upset, you should take action. You should not say that this is a personal matter, I suppose.
For sure, as well. And you can also brainstorm with the employee what would be the help that you can provide. Would it be in beefing up security? Would it be in allowing them a certain leave of absence for a short while? Because that is also an issue, especially in stalking cases when it's persistent. It can affect your productivity at work and also affect the employee, where they may not feel safe to come to work and therefore not show up at work. And if the employer doesn't know, you risk losing your job.
Of course, that is
a possibility.
Yeah, I think to add on to this discussion on the workplace, definitely it would be great if employers are supportive. However, because the law is quite limited now, even if the employer is supportive, there's not always something that they can do.
Mm.
I think that's one point. And the second point is that it can also be the target of a stalker.
Mm.
So
yeah.
A stalker, not only, it's quite a common approach to not just stalk or harass the person that is the end sort of target, but also those around her, so her family members, her employers, and so on. And the reason, there are various reasons. So one reason is sometimes stalkers might feel that, okay, this person who I'm stalking actually wants to be with me or wants me to do this, but these people around her are influencing her or not allowing her to be with me.
Right.
And so they might then target those people around her. They might also specifically target those people just to get at the survivor.
Mm-hmm.
So they might want to just make her and harass them to the point where they will not want to help the survivor. So stalking laws are important not just for stalking survivors, but anyone who is close to a survivor who would be also be potentially be a target of a stalker.
That's really true, because, again, it goes back to the whole wheel of power and control, right? And how you are able to do that to the person that you're stalking. And it can get to a point where it's damage of property. It could be trying to build relationships with those who are close to the victim as well. Those are different things that can happen.
And
the employee is also part of that.
Because if you start to intimidate, I suppose, the people who are close and around them, and they get fearful, then you're more and more, you're alienating the poor survivor, right? So there's just many, many levels of... So, okay, bottom line is this needs to be criminalized.
Yes.
I think just to send a strong message that this is not acceptable.
Yeah.
Okay.
We do... WAO, of course, provides support to women who have been survivors of any gender-based violence, so domestic violence, sexual violence, and, of course, including stalking. We provide crisis shelter, counselling, and as well as case management support. So if you or anyone you know have been facing abuse or other forms of gender violence, you can contact us at our WAO hotline, 03-7956-3488, or you can WhatsApp or SMS us at 018-988-8058. So I'll repeat that. Our hotline is 03-7956-3488. And our SMS or WhatsApp number is 018-988-8058.
Okay, so and even if I'm being stalked or I know someone who's being stalked, I could approach you guys as well for help.
Yes. Absolutely.
Okay, all right. Thank you so much, both of you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
I've been speaking to Yuren Chung and Anne Nunes. They are both with the Women's Aid Organization, and we've been discussing why there is a very serious need to criminalize stalking in Malaysia. For more information, you can also visit the WAO website at wao.org.my. And just to repeat, if you're facing any form of domestic violence or any form of gender-based violence, you can call the WAO hotline at 03-7956-3488 or send a text or WhatsApp message to, I think it's called the Tina hotline if I'm not mistaken, mm-hmm. right? Yes. I think I need aid at 018-988-8058. You've been listening to Feminist Fridays on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.